Hello, darling Rage Nation. Welcome to the newest episode of the Rad as Fuck Women series. I have Steph Lagana here. Hi, Steph.
Hello, hello.
I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, yeah. I'm thrilled. Your Instagram feed gives me so much contentment on any given day of the week. I'm delighted to be able to give a little bit back.
Well, thank you. I was just going to say, first of all, before we get too ahead of ourselves, you're a spiritual teacher and a business strategist. Is there anything else you'd like to kind of explain to the audience as far as what you do so we can introduce you?
Sure. A little bit of background, I think, would help. I'm an extremely practical and extremely woo-woo as fuck person.
It's wonderful.
the way that happened was, I spent 11 years working for the U.S. government. I was in national security. I was supporting the military. And then I had this very space-making disaster. And that really launched me powerfully onto the healing journey that I've been exploring for the past few years, and ultimately led me to leave the government. So those are the important bits that I'm an extraordinarily woo-woo person these days, mystical. I believe in incredible collaboration with the unseen. Mm-hmm. And I did not start off this way in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, man. Well, I'm now even more excited to dig into that story and that journey. But I will also say, going back to what we were talking about in the beginning with you appreciating my Instagram, I appreciate every time I catch you on Facebook Live because you're just like so calming. And I was telling my partner, Christian, I was like, I actually can't wait for this recording today because I'm sure it'll feel like it'll feel so refreshing to talk to Steph. So
thank you.
I appreciate your energy, girl.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I think for a long time, I felt that I was a little bit out of place and I was using other people to help navigate where I thought I was and where I was supposed to be. And now I recognize that I've had a long theme of not feeling like I fit anywhere because I was intended to create. And, you know, like whatever loneliness I've experienced has always been about me being out ahead of whatever crowd I perceive there to be so I can build. And if people are listening and they don't know me, that might sound like, oh, well, yeah, she's got her look at me pants on. But it really is like this incredibly comforting place to be in because there has been a really strong theme in my life of feeling like an outsider. So,
yeah.
So well, thank you for that reflection. It really means a lot to me.
Absolutely. Well, there's so much. Okay. So first of all, I don't think from my perspective, especially as a creative person, that is you being, you know, egotistical or anything at all. I think that makes total sense. And I kind of want to touch on that a little bit more because that's really interesting. Because I think a lot of creative people, especially if they have a calling, you know, to be a leader in any capacity, there is that loneliness component. And especially if you see possibilities that other people can't see yet, you're kind of in a place of loneliness and, you know, you find your tribe and they're following you and everything, but there's always those moments of like, all right, I just need to kind of lean into this because this is a gift that I'll be able to bring to the world.
Yes. Yes. Sure. Yes. 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 Mm-hmm. Yes. I can be on that platform all day. I work with purpose-driven entrepreneurs. I normally say like soul-led entrepreneurs. I do other work that's kind of behind the curtain in my mystery school, but I do a lot of work and my Facebook group is oriented towards people who are soul-led entrepreneurs. And one of the images, because I'm a huge metaphor person, I think it helps so much to navigate the, you know, mild shenanigans that can occur in life and the heavier ones.
Mild
to heavy on any given day, especially in the past few weeks. Oh my God.
Oh man, it seems like it.
yeah. Every time I'm like, hey, are the solar flares done yet? Are we done with Mercury retrograde? I really strongly believe that a part of our purpose as soul-led entrepreneurs is to go out into our field. It's the build it and they will come scenario. Go out into our field. And for a while, it feels like nobody's there. But that's right. The point is that that's a part of our leadership and like staking our claim and creating the space that people are then going to come into.
Yeah. So good. Oh my goodness. So tell me a little bit more, because now I want to back up. I didn't realize that you worked in government before. I would love to know a little bit more about that journey. How did, tell me more about that and then that transition. Like you talked about there being really a big moment that catapulted you into the healing process. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, totally. And before I do that, I just want to say that because of the space that I'm in my life, all of this should make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are people listening that are not in a space where it feels clear, and like they connect the dots, it's easy to mythologize these stories and to say like, oh, and this is the path that I was on and it's so lovely and this all came together. And also when I was in the middle of it, I felt like, you know, on any given day, my heart was falling out of my fucking chest. Mm-hmm. And none of it made sense. And spiritual awakening often seems to come with this like sense of turbulence, mm-hmm. or like implosion from the inside out. So
yes, and thank you for saying that. That's huge. And I love the way that you said that we mythologize these stories, because it's so true. Even if someone's like a step or two ahead of you, we tend to be like, oh, they have their shit together and what's wrong with me and what am I doing? And I love how like Brené Brown talks about this when she talks about her like big breakdown in the beginning of her career and how she's like, it was a breakdown, but my therapist calls it a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah. So mythologizing. So at some point I was a fucking mess, but before that I was fucking fantastic. I was a very high speed, fast mover that worked for the government and got incredible things done. I was born in the 80s. I went to college, and as I was graduating, 9/11 happened. And my family was in the DC area, and there was a lot of my family on one branch going back to the Revolutionary War, a lot of my family that have been involved in the government, that have been involved in the military, that have taken the idea of public service and translated it in a way that aligned with like a very particular set of values. And these days, I think in my head, the narrative is like I've transitioned from national security to global security. Like I'm more working on behalf of greater humanity.
It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels so true for me and helps me see why on a like a high level soul level, this happened this way. So 9/11 happened. And I had been very passionate about the idea of being in service to the government. And that's like the sophisticated way of saying it. Legit, I was going through puberty and I wanted to be like a spy for the CIA and kill the bad guys. So I know it's kind of funny. Like I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be a ballerina. I wanted to go out and kill bad guys all over the world. So,
you know, Renaissance, multi-talented lady.
It's so funny. And now I operate in like so many woo-woo circles. Sometimes I'm more public and overt about my story than others.
Yeah.
So I was really good with languages and I loved international studies and I did a whole bunch of stuff in college. And even though I was the first person in my family to go away to college, I was really diligent. I left high school a year early. I got a ton of scholarships and I was able to go abroad several times, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was a priority for me. So I pursued it. And then I left and I and I had this hunger very deep inside of me to be tested. And yeah, I think that's the best way for me to be describing it, is I was very hungry to be tested, like to know the metal inside of me. And a few years went by and I got a job with the government that was extremely competitive, and it was working in technology with the military. And I progressed really quickly, and I was super, super good at taking in like huge amounts of data and finding fast solutions, and also creating really large pictures, like finding how everything fit together for me was super simple. So I created this incredible career over time. And then I went on a 6-month assignment to Afghanistan. I volunteered. I was a government employee. They, unless you're in a particular very small set of positions, they can't really force you to go.
Right.
And I came back, and I didn't realize at the time that I was an empath. And so I worked anywhere between 12 and 20 hours a day. And when I got back, everything that happened while I was gone started to happen inside of me.
Yeah. And for people who might not really understand, because I'm also an empath, would you explain a little bit more about what it means to be an empath?
Yeah, so I'll share it through a story.
Sure.
I had several coworkers who were military, prior military, and I had a good portion of people who had no conception. It was, you know, people with PhDs in engineering and very passionate and accomplished people doing their thing. And so I came back, and at one point I was having a conversation with someone who was a friend, someone who I had supported coming into the government. She was a really nice young woman who had not a great deal of life experience, and she thought that I had stayed in a hotel while I was gone. And I was like, no, I was very fortunate. I didn't have to sleep on the ground, but you know, it's definitely a war zone. No Marriotts. And she said, well, it seems like you're a little bit bothered. You know, what happened? And she asked me if I had been in an explosion. And she wanted to know if like I had been hit by a bullet, or if there had been something that had damaged my physical body. And I realized when she was saying that, that she was not going to be able to understand that I experienced like the emotional shrapnel of war inside of me, but that was not sufficient for her because she was not an empath. So the way that I receive it is, even when I work on my boundaries, other people's experience are something that I can very easily step into. And that can be incredibly fatiguing. And it can also be really painful. So it's like, I think one way that I would describe it, and again, this is completely my experience, is like, people who aren't empaths have a colander, and they can really easily sort out the stuff that isn't theirs. And there's like big holes in the colander.
Right.
My colander has like very fine mesh. And I have to really work to get other people's stuff out of my space.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good metaphor. And I feel like even when you were saying that, I was like, yeah, nodding my head in agreement. And I think that I need to have times of like tipping myself upside down and dumping that stuff out, because it won't naturally go through the colander because the holes are so small. Right. So like I have, and I'm the same way. I will feel the empathy and like the deep emotion and pain of people around me or near me or whatever, even with boundaries. And I have to be intentional about taking time by myself to realign and sort that out. Otherwise it's like I'll get really irritable and I won't really realize that it's not even my shit. You know?
Yeah, that was a complete game changer for me. The idea of not having to have a logical explanation for what was going on inside of me.
Right.
As soon as I hit that, I was like, oh God, like now we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So you got back and you were starting to feel all of these things that had happened in Afghanistan. And then tell me more about that process coming out of it.
Yeah. And let me also say that when I was there, I knew that there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of the 6 months, I had my replacement show up, and he had been out in all sorts of very harsh environments before in war zones. He had been in Iraq and other places, and he was really stressed out. And we were sitting at lunch one day, and there was a rocket attack that happened. So I was in Kandahar, which is in southern Afghanistan, and mm-hmm. rocket attacks were a daily feature of life. And sometimes it was 8 times a day, and sometimes it was once a day. But
wow.
There were big concrete bunkers, and rocket attacks happened. And you put yourself in the bunker until it was safe to come out, which I didn't realize at the time how deeply that would affect me. Like, I came back after a few weeks, I realized that there was this commercial that was on TV that had the same tone as the rocket attack alarm, because there mm-hmm. was an alarm. And every time I would hear it on TV, my body would just lock, because
right. Like trauma after trauma.
Yeah.
That you're like internalizing.
Yeah. And I had no idea. Like, I didn't have any tools to deal with it at the time. And like, my experience with personal development was like way different depth. In that time I was like mostly focused on leadership development in like a mm-hmm. corporate sense. But so anyway, he and I were having lunch, and this was like at the very end of my 6 months, and the rocket attack alarm went off. And everybody hid underneath the tables, and they were very quick about it. And I remember very lazily, slowly, like a tortoise, like getting down onto the ground and looking at him. And he had this tick. You know how some people pick at their skin when they're mm-hmm. stressed out? He started doing that. And I remember at the time, this voice that I recognize now as like this critic that I've internalized and have a much different relationship now with, but I remember at the time thinking like, this guy's got to get it together, he's not gonna make it. and then there was this another voice that showed up and was like, Steph, we're gonna have to deal with this, that's not right. legitimately, we're in a war zone and we're being attacked by a rocket, and I'm saying like, this isn't the right response.
Right.
Yeah. So I came back, and my feelers, my radar was all busted up.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, while I was gone, when you're in a war zone, at least with the U.S. military, you're not allowed to drink alcohol. And mm-hmm. I had always been, quote, a good drinker, like the person that was very capable of mm-hmm. drinking alcohol. And so when I got back, I have since stopped drinking. I stopped drinking I guess that's 2 years ago now. But
mm-hmm.
When I got back, I returned to alcohol in a different way, in a way that was like a security blanket. I'm a therapist and a friend. And it just kind of went downhill from there in terms of my ability to process what was happening to me. And I was just automatically led to this part-time life coach training program.
Mm-hmm.
That I was able to attend. So I went to Afghanistan 2011 to 2012, and then went to this part-time life coach training program in 2013. And that really was like my activation as a healer
mm-hmm.
and a light worker. So
what led you, what was the thing that got you into this life coaching? Did it just kind of pop up for you, or what was that?
Oh yeah, totally magical. It doesn't make any sense. I remember after a few months, I went back and I was like, how did this happen? this woman named Martha Beck, who is a Harvard trained sociologist, and she runs a life coach training program now. She has an institute. She's written a whole bunch of books, and I had come upon one of her books years before, and I found myself on her website, and then I found myself registering for a call for people who were interested in her training program, and I was like, oh, this is never going to happen. And then she did this visualization for people who were on the call, which PS was like 95% people who had already signed up and were just so excited that they had to like connect with her energy.
And you were just like, hey, I'm here.
yeah, totally. She did this visualization and she talked about, oh, because one of the people on the call said, how do you know when you really need to do something, even though you're afraid of it? And how do you know when you're really just afraid of it because it's not right for you and it's a bad thing and you just need to like get the hell out of there? Which is, I mean, right? Like, what a powerful
Oh
question.
man.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Because that was exactly what was going on in my body. And,
Yep.
right?
I
Like,
was like, that was for you, actually.
yeah, completely. And she did this visualization that was all about walking. It was walking on a pool on the diving board and then holding this question or decision like with you in your body, closing your eyes, imagining you walking to the end of the diving board. And then when you open your eyes, is the water clear and you want to jump in, but you're afraid because it's a little high up? Or is the water filled with like sewage and you've just got to like get the fuck out of there? So,
That's
yeah.
so good.
Isn't
Oh
it?
man. I feel like I
Oh,
need to like take some time in my next meditation to visualize that about some things.
yeah. Oh my gosh. I loved it. It's so useful.
Is. Oh my goodness. So then you took her course, I'm
Yeah.
assuming.
Yeah, the water was clear, and I was like, shit, I'm gonna be doing this. Because I mean, at the time, I was very committed to my career, and that meant for me, pattern of workaholism masking, you know, a lot of things. That was like 60 hours a week. I had come back, my agency moved from Virginia to Maryland. I was working at Fort Meade. So there was that exciting commute. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, that traffic is not the
That
best.
probably was like daily trauma in itself.
It was not enjoyable. Although towards the end of my career, I found myself self-toning. And so I'd be in the car and I'd just like be spontaneously emitting ohm. Because the thing that I realized was that I was so woo-woo, I wasn't an energetic leadership of myself when I was in traffic. I was getting other people's shit because I wasn't able to bring them with me. And so then I started playing with that, like, how much can I calm down, you know, my brethren here in DC traffic? And so, yeah, it was.
That's really amazing, though. Like, it's so powerful when you finally start to tap into that understanding of I mean, I guess it's repetitive, but like your internal power and how it can really affect the atmosphere around you. Like,
Yes.
it's crazy. Crazy.
So much. Holy shit. Superpowers all the way.
It's true. Like, I just recently started doing, I used to do yoga every morning and I haven't really been because there's been so much life stuff going on, but I just started doing that again. And I was like, this is like, yep. Because it's like you're getting up in the morning. I meditate anyway, but meditating and doing yoga. So it's like a whole practice. It's taking control of my day and breathing. And then I'm locked into my body and my breath. So I can feel automatically when I'm starting to get tense during my work day. And I can breathe and let it go. And other people feel that. And it's amazing because they'll be like, you're so calm. And it's like, well, you can be calm too.
Come here with me.
Right, exactly.
That's so good. Oh, I'm so happy for you.
Oh,
Gosh.
thanks.
Daily practices are the thing. That and being in your body, because
Right.
once you get on target with that, you start to realize how often people are not in their body and in the present moment. How often they're in their
Right.
head, how often they're in the past or the future. It's amazing how people time travel and dislocate themselves.
Right. It's so true. So, oh my goodness. So, like, you took this life coaching thing and you came out of it. And then, so you were taking these classes while you were still doing your career in the military, correct? Or,
Working for the government, supporting the military. So, like, it was all digital too, which was hilarious because I was like a secret squirrel. So I did not have a digital footprint. Like, if you looked for me on the internet, there were very few references. Like, I even told my old high school on the website that I was dead. Like, I was a shit a little bit. And so, like, I got a Facebook account in 2014, extremely reluctantly. In order to interact more with my peers from the coach training community, which was incredible because I really 90%, 95% of my old career was working with men. And I had a lot of judgment about other women and what it would be like to interact with them. And it was judgment, but also fear around being accepted by other women. And what it looked like to be in my power and interact with other women. So, yeah, it's been an incredible journey. Like, things are so fucking different. It's unreal. It's a miracle.
Well, and isn't that crazy how, especially with women on women like relationships, how we have a tendency to, I mean, with any human relationships, we bring our own crap to the table. So it's like usually if there's a strain, you have to get curious about your own reactions, right? And be like, what's going on internally that's making me assume this is going to be this way or like react in this way?
Totally. As above, so below, for sure.
So how has your life, obviously you, I can tell just talking to you, like hearing about your past and then just hearing the way that you speak now, I can tell because I'm an empath that this is so different. Like your life is so different. Your way of being is so different. How did it change once you started interacting online with more women, like getting more into the woo-woo? Like what was that transformation like for you on the inside?
It escalated quickly.
That should be our quote for this episode. That escalated
It was like the black diamond ski slope. I mean,
Oh, man.
yeah, I fell fast in like the most fantastic possible way. One thing led to another. Most of my peers that were in my coach community were women, which was strange for me at the time. And they also, a lot of them had been on a personal development journey for a while. And I really had experienced personal development in a very narrow way because I had always been curious. Like, I read The Alchemist in the early 2000s and quit one of my jobs, like right out of college. I was like, I can't do this. But like, so much of my reading was focused on leadership development and things that I thought would help to propel me forward in my workplace. And so just interacting with women that had emotional fluency and a deeper level of commitment to truth was really amazing. Like, I don't know if you've experienced this before, just meeting someone that's committed more to questioning and curiosity than they are to their own ego. Whoa.
Every time I meet someone like that, and you're one of those people, obviously, I'm like, yep, let's just talk for hours and hours. This is great.
It's remarkable because so much of my world was of a particular dimension in that, like, I was so focused on my work and I had some hobbies, but so much of my identity was bounded by my work life, and so much of my work life was bounded by a particular role that I played. And there was emotion that was there, but it was the emotion of compatibility and getting stuff done as a team rather than like the profound depths that come in the world of coaching and seeking too, like big S seeking. So yeah, so different, like the transformation. I mean, I remember there was, I mean, even just the period, because I started my business in 2013, I knew, like, I have to give this gift to other people. There's so many people out there that I've encountered that need this. I had always had a heart for service, but I just knew, like, I've got to get this out into the world. Even just the difference between today and right after I quit drinking, I had an experience. I was living in Baltimore at the time, and I had seen this guy that I had gone out on a date with that ghosted on me. And I remember going back to my apartment and saying, this is why I'm not drinking, because all I want to do right now is like get a bottle of wine and down it. And I need to feel my feelings. And I see now that I was actually like putting this huge wall in between me and my heart. And I choose not to do that anymore. So that really wasn't that long ago. I mean, gosh, 2 years? Oh, shit.
Hey, a lot can happen in 2 years.
You're telling me. Oh, my God. It's incredible. Just even the journey that I've had in the past year. Last spring, I was in India for almost 4 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went on this huge spiritual pilgrimage, which was all about, like, living in the moment and being led and guided, feeling that flow of energy. And so now on Facebook, I'm seeing moments from last year going like, whoa, just,
dang.
Yeah, just how much has changed since then. It's just been, it's been wild. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Would you ever go back, and can I go with you if you did?
Yes and yes. The very end. So you've never been?
No.
Okay.
I have not, but like India and Bali are both, they're on my list sure. And I was never, I mean, people who listen to my podcast know this, but I'm going through a divorce right now. And travel was always something that I wanted to do, and that because of like the marriage situation that I was in, it never ended up being able to be. So now I'm like opening up to all these possibilities, and travel is definitely one of them. So that's why I ask. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it's far too. Just getting there tends to be like a 14 to 20 hour experience. And then India is ginormous.
Like, right.
It's 20 countries combined together. And then traveling, I've been on a 36 hour train in India, and that wasn't even like most of it.
Like, right.
That was just like one small segment there. The one recommendation I want to give you is, other than to take charcoal pills, serious.
Okay. Right.
Very good for you. That and probiotics.
What do charcoal pills do? That are they for your gut?
Yeah, it's intended to absorb any toxins.
Okay.
Anything that shows up when you might eat lower quality food, for instance, and tummy troubles could be a thing in India. So, yeah, probiotics and charcoal pills. That's my strong recommendations. Yeah, totally. There's this temple in the north, which almost no Westerners go to, and it is the most remarkable thing. It's absolutely incredible. I went to Dharamshala and had looked at sacred sites in India months before when I was looking at the trip. I believe in a benevolent universe, and I believe that I have guides that talk to me and talk to everyone. Mm-hmm. And for people who are open to listening, I guess I need to phrase it that way. Yeah. For people who are open to listening, it can be so empowering. You can quantum leap in your life when you open up to collaboration with the divine. And so when I made the choice to leave the government, within like 24 or 48 hours, I had this insight that I needed to go on this really big trip. And originally it was going to be 4 months in India and then like 3 months in Peru, but I didn't wind up going to Peru. So I bought my ticket, and at some point, like maybe 2 months before, I like told my guides, I was like, okay, I'm trusting that what is going to happen on this trip is exactly what I'll need. And it would be nice if you told me a little bit about what was going to happen.
Right.
like, give me something, like something to hang on to. And when I asked slash like told them, what I got back from that was, I'm going to go and I'm going to speak to the land, and I'm going to go talk to the desert, and then I'm going to go talk to the ocean, and then I'm going to go talk to the mountains. And that is basically what the framework of my trip was. I went to the desert, to Rajasthan first, and then I went to the ocean, to Goa. And then I went to Dharamshala and this temple, Vaishno Devi, which is dedicated to three goddesses. And you walk 18 miles up and down the mountain.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know what your trip to India is going to be like. But this is an incredibly special pilgrimage to the Divine Mother. And I had no sooner walked all the way up and walked down than I said, I know I'll be going back. So I don't know when that's going to be, but I am going to go back for sure.
Well, we'll just remain open and see what see what happens, what the universe brings our way.
Right. I have other recommendations that are not like taking 2 days to walk up and down a mountain.
Right.
I do.
Like some touristy things and
camels galore for sure. There's incredibly. India is such a land of contrast, and it's like a land of hyper manifestation. Like anything that's going on inside of you shows up on the outside. Like if you're afraid, shit that makes you more afraid shows up on the outside.
Yeah.
Especially when you are a woman traveling there. I actually don't recommend traveling alone. I went by myself and I linked up with other female travelers while I was meandering, but I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the most practical thing is to maybe have some buddies that you trust. Just in case. And I feel like, at least for me, I'm such a emotional and verbal processor. I would need at least one friend to be able to verbally process this stuff with. So,
Yes. Because there are some places that when you go to them there, there are so many people that have passed there with faith in their heart and like devotion and compassion. It's all you can do just to like be in your body and feel the holiness of a place. I had like 5 different experiences in India, not including the temple at the very end where I had like it was an ecstatic experience. I spent like 5 hours crying, feeling. It was amazing. On so many levels.
It sounds like there was a lot of release on that trip. That's
cool. Yeah, I definitely went through a sacred unwinding. I had an identity before I left as like a former civil servant. And when I came back, that was gone.
I love that picture of unwinding or like undoing when it comes to really like digging into yourself and surrendering to that process. I think it's just such a beautiful picture of what can happen when you allow yourself to really feel what's going on with all of the shit that happens in our lives and everything. And then just becoming more self-aware. Such a beautiful picture for that. Love it.
Yeah. And it kind of like the mythologizing story, like, I truly believe that when you have a spiritual awakening and have these like incredible insights, that a lot of times they are accompanied by feeling like you're going fucking nuts.
That is another thing.
Yeah, doesn't have to be. I just heard someone talking recently about this online, about the idea of the Phoenix syndrome, like the idea that your life has to come crashing apart so that you can come back in like this fiery rebirth. But I'm mindful of making it seem like I've got my shit together or had my shit together, because
right,
you know, it's all in process, and some days it's easier than not just to clothe and bathe myself.
Yeah, no, everybody, that's just like the human experience, right? And I feel like I really identify with like the hero's journey.
Yes.
There really needs to be some sort of something that shakes you out of whatever you're in before, whether it's like cataclysmic or not so much, you know, that's all relative. It's just usually as human beings, we need something that brings us face to face with ourselves.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And on a spiritual level, there are so many ways that people are led by pain. There are so many ways that people's attention is gotten by pain, whether it's like physical pain or emotional pain, pain around money. Like there's so many ways that we can let ourselves be in a trance and pain can wake us up. And so when our guides want to get our attention, if we aren't actively communicating with them and actively giving them our attention, pain is a tactic, which is why I encourage people, all of my people, to have some sort of daily practice where they're tuning in. You know, when you do your journaling, when you do your yoga, like when you proactively show up, you can get ahead of the curve for sure.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad you said that, because I think that what's been really transformational for me is that practice of observing and noticing. And even when it's like physical pain in my body, like I'm thinking about my yoga practice, and the meditative part of that is really taking time to breathe and notice. And if there is pain, to observe it and not attach anything to it, but then to breathe into it and just notice, okay, this is something that's happening. This is something I need to pay attention to. And, you know, as opposed to being like, oh my gosh, it's so painful. Let me like ruminate and form all of these, you know, cyclical thoughts around it. It's more of like a, let's notice and observe and then breathe through it.
That's so good.
Yeah.
In my old community, my community of origin, I think of it as a light worker. People talk a lot about clean pain versus dirty pain, or pain versus suffering. You know, the idea of whatever you need to experience as a baseline, and then anything that you would do to amplify it.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a huge one, because there is a lot of in my life and in other people's lives that I've observed, I do think that there can be some pig and shit moments with pain.
Right. It's so true. And it's crazy how much power our mind has over like the amplifying of certain things.
Yeah.
It's insane.
We are definitely, I say sometimes like our future is a quilt of today. Just over and over and over again. And I really do feel like who we are is that same cohesion, but of our patterns of thinking and feeling. And we really can be grooves that we set in over and over again. So if you get into the habit and the practice of like cynicism, for instance, is one that I find that can be really toxic. And acidic, to like living in a way that's fully expressed. It's remarkable, you know, when you repeat it over time, what happens.
Yeah, definitely. Also good. So to kind of close this out, I just have one more question for you. And that is, if you could give your younger self a piece of advice, what would that be?
Ooh.
Or like a wisdom tidbit.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I want to tell her so much.
I know. I feel the same way whenever I ask this question. I'm like, how do you choose?
Yeah. Well, and seriously, you know, inside secret, I don't think time is real. So I think we can go back.
Right.
I think we can go back and tell ourselves. Yeah. So the main thing that comes through in the moment is community has more power than can be expressed in words. So cultivate it. continue it, contribute to it, like really show up for it, and don't be afraid to be not only the person that leads community, but then leans on other people.
Ah, so good. Thank you so much, Steph. This conversation has been just as refreshing, if not more, as what I expected it would be.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's such a pleasure to talk more. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, bright blessings.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Wasn't that conversation so good? Oh my goodness. They just keep on getting better and better. I cannot wait to share more with you babes next week. If you're enjoying the Darling Rage Nation podcast and this Rad as Fuck Women series that we've been doing, please be sure to go on iTunes or any other platform that you are listening to this on and leave a rating and review. If you leave a sweet review, I'm doing this thing where I'm going to start shouting you guys out. So if you leave a review on iTunes telling me how much you've been loving this interview series, I'm going to give you a shout out in the next couple of episodes. And I think that's just going to be a fun way to connect us and get the podcast a little more visible. So thank you so much for listening, babes. You guys are amazing. As always, you can come and hang out with me on Facebook, Darling Rage Creations, or on Instagram at The Darling Rage. Can't wait to see you there. Hope you have a fantastic remainder of your week. And as always, rage on, darlings.